In this episode of the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast, we're going to talk about a local business closing, a recent ride that I went on, and some issues with software leasing that seems to be happening right now. Not necessarily software leasing, but feature leasing in terms of motorcycles. Stick around. Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast. I am your host, Walt from Walt in PA. And if you're new here, the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast is basically, it's a general motorcycle podcast with the flexibility and freedom to approach topics that are kind of on the outskirts of motorcycles. If you enjoy what you hear or what you see, don't forget to like and subscribe to both the video feed as well as the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and a variety of others. So I guess the best place to start this episode is with a bit of a podcast update. I hit a personal milestone, one that I feel is pretty important. That is episode number 10. I was doing a little bit of research on podcasting in general, and it seems like the magic number seems to be 7. A lot of new shows don't make it past episode 7. You know, for lack of traction and variety of other reasons. But 7 seems to be that threshold where you see a big tapering of shows just dropping off. The next big number, from what I understand, is about 20 episodes. And I feel like I'm well on my way. And I'm pretty happy with the progress of the podcast. You know, I've got a small audience that seems to be growing. And I'm really, really happy with it. But going into the winter season, I'm not really sure what to expect, to be quite honest. I don't know if you can see it on the video feed, but I can see my breath. It is getting a little bit chilly out here in the motorcycle shed, and I suspect that when we hit December, January, and February is going to be absolutely brutal. It is going to be downright frigid out here, and I'm not quite sure how I'm going to make that work just yet. But rest assured, I will find a way to make it work. You know, to go along with that, I'm finding it a little more difficult to come up with topic ideas for the podcast, mostly because riding seems to be tapering off. You know, days are getting shorter, the weather is getting colder. I'm not able to get out and ride as much as I would really like to. And as such, I'm finding it harder and harder to come up with topic ideas. So if anyone has any ideas that you want to hear something discussed in particular on the podcast, please feel free to reach out to me at Walt@WaltNPA. I'd love to get your input and some of your ideas, what you want to see of the podcast, of the show, of the YouTube channel, that sort of thing. So again, reach out. So I was actually planning on doing this first topic last, because it has the potential to be kind of long and rambling, but I want to go down that road now. So we're gonna kick off the show with this phenomenon that seems to be going on with feature leasing. So if you've been around the software industry for any period of time, you know that things have changed dramatically in terms of licensing. So I own a business, Superior Shop Drawings, and we use AutoCAD on a daily basis. Now, years ago, when you purchased an AutoCAD license, you owned that piece of software. It was permanent. You purchased the license, and then you were able to use that for years. I hate to say it, but I know a number of businesses that continue to operate on AutoCAD 2009, which is very, very dated. But because the way the software worked, once you purchased the license, there was really no need to ever purchase another one if you didn't want to upgrade. So in terms of upgrading, if you wanted to, let's say AutoCAD 2009 came out, you purchased it, you liked it, the following year 2010 came out, it had new features, new benefits. The incentive was, if you're an existing customer and you have the previous year's license, they'll give you a loyalty discount to upgrade to the current version. And you can sort of piggyback your way through the versions that way. But over the last few years, the way that the licenses are structured has changed to a subscription model or a leasing model. So now every year I have to purchase a new license for AutoCAD, or I have to renew my existing license, and it's tied to a user account. So I have access to all of the software in the vertical. You know, I have access to AutoCAD itself. I have access to AutoCAD Mechanical, you know, a variety of other things. And when the subscription is up, or when the lease is up, they cut me off. I no longer have access to the software. They're no longer giving away, or they're no longer selling like permanent licenses anymore. And they're forcing you into this subscription model that, I guess the idea behind it is to keep you paying on a regular basis, keep cash flow up. And, you know, as this trend continues with software, I'm kind of seeing it happen in motorcycles. And it's kind of an interesting development, and I'm not exactly thrilled about it. So there's been a variety of topics and videos flying around on YouTube of different things that are happening with variety of motorcycles. The first of which is Zero. They seem to be doing sort of feature upgrades. So, and I think this is the most infuriating of the bunch. So basically, you go out and you purchase a Zero motorcycle, and then there are a list of upgrades. So let's say the range on the base model is 100 miles, or you could pay Zero another $1,000 and get a 20% bump in your mileage. So now your motorcycle, using the same battery as the base model, same physically identical battery as the base model, is now unlocked to give you an extra 20 miles of range. Or you could pay, let's say, another $1,000 on top of that, and maybe instead of 20% additional range, you get 25% range, and maybe you get a quick charge option in there with it. So it's not the physical components that are changing, it's the software that's running behind the scenes that's sort of locking and unlocking features of various motorcycle components or parts. In the case of Zero, a lot of it seems to be around the battery. Now, the biggest gripe that I have with this is that you are physically purchasing the battery. You're by buying the base model, it's not like you get a lighter battery or a smaller battery. You're getting the exact same battery as someone that's paying a premium for additional storage. So it's almost like Zero is handicapping the battery unless you want to pay a premium. Now, I suppose I can see both sides of that argument where, okay, it's an a la carte system where you only pay for the features that you want. But I have an issue with that when you are paying for the components in their entirety up front, and it's just these software locks, these virtual locks that are in place that prevent you from utilizing the items that you've purchased, you know, the physical components. Now, I recently saw something else from, KTM, where they're doing demo options, which is kind of an interesting little thing here. So just like with Zero, you're purchasing the base model of the motorcycle, you're getting all of these physical components, these mechanical components, that are all set up to do everything that the bike has to offer. And with this demo mode, everything is unlocked. So after 3 months or so, if you choose that you don't want to pay for these options, an additional fee for the functionality to continue, they lock you out of certain things. So, you know, if this motorcycle has a quick shifter, the quick shifter is physically on the bike, but the ECU disables the quick shifter from functioning properly. So that, I think, is a really nasty, downright way of stringing customers along for money. I don't like that at all. And I can see the camp saying, well, you know, it's no different than Sirius satellite radio. You know, you buy a new vehicle, it comes with a free trial of Sirius, and if you don't want it after 3 months or 6 months or whatever the trial is, it's no longer available. The radio is still in the car. You're paying for the equipment. You're just no longer paying for the service. In that case, I think it's different because it's a service. It's not the functionality of a component. So there's a lot of uproar going around online about this new KTM demo mode. There's a lot of backlash going on around the issues with Zero. And another little interesting thing about Zero. So now I mentioned that this could get kind of rambling and long, and this is as if this didn't already go on a couple of tangents. I watch a variety of things on YouTube, and there's this ASMR trend where you kind of watch things to relax. You know, like there's these chiropractic channels where you watch them and they'll like crack people's necks and backs and all that stuff. And people are really into that. I used to like watching this guy, Lewis Rothman. He owns a computer repair shop in New York. It's not like ASMR type stuff, but it's the same sort of thing where I would watch him fix a computer. He's big on Apple products and he fixes a lot of Macs. So he will physically take apart a Mac and he will start going through the logic board, checking circuits and capacitors and try to hunt down what is preventing the computer from working. And he'll kind of talk as he goes along. So I've been following this guy for a little while. He's become very big in the right to repair push, where he feels that manufacturers are obligated to give their consumers the ability to repair their own products, where you shouldn't be locked into going to a dealership or going to a particular manufacturer, in his case, Apple, to have your stuff serviced, especially when you take the product there and they tell you, oh, no, we can't fix this. Your laptop is toast. Only to find out that the same consumers take the products to him and he'll tear it apart and say, well, no, this only a, you know, it's a $200 part. You don't need to spend $1,400 on a new laptop. You know, like he feels as though that consumers are almost being ripped off in situations like this. And there was one video where he started talking about Zero. So one of the people that followed him reached out and they were explaining a situation that they were having with their motorcycle. He's big into electric bikes as well. So in this particular instance, this individual purchased a Zero motorcycle. They were having problems with it, and it was a relatively simple problem that could be fixed relatively easily. But the problem was Zero has all of their stuff locked down. Unless you're an authorized Zero retailer or Zero shop, you can't work on their products. You're kind of locked out of them. So in this individual's case, the nearest Zero dealership was like 125 miles away. The range on the Zero was 100 miles or so. So he physically wasn't able to ride the motorcycle to the dealership to be fixed for this simple problem, and became this big issue where he had to have it towed. And then Lewis Rothman went down the rabbit hole, discovering a variety of other issues that were going on with Zero motorcycles and how they're locking consumers out and making it impossible for them to do their own repairs, especially when it came down to the electronic components. So kind of an interesting development going on right now with feature locks, demo modes. And I'd be really interested to hear your take on this whole situation. You know, what are your thoughts on electric motorcycles and your supposed inability to work on your own motorcycle or being locked out of certain features after your demo period is over when you purchase a KTM? I'd love to hear your thoughts. All right, the next topic I have for you is a little bit of bad news. So a couple episodes back, I had talked about going on a group ride with Untamed Ride and Trekkimoto. And we decided to visit this little place called Bames Coffee Shop. It's a coffee place out in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. And the cool thing about this shop is that the route to get there is basically the Pennsylvania Tale of the Dragon. You know, I don't know where these names come from. You know, insert scary animal and body part, and you've got your motorcycle road. So it's this long, twisty, curvy road. It's loads and loads of fun that runs up, I believe it's Pennsylvania Route 125 and Goldmine Road. It pretty much dumps you right off into Shamokin. And nestled inside of Shamokin is Bames Coffee Shop. It's a coffee shop that is in an old church. And it's probably one of the most unique places I've been to with my motorcycle in the last couple of years. I found it fascinating to be sitting in this place. And I really enjoyed my time there. I believe Untamed Ride and Trekkimoto also enjoyed their time there. And at least Untamed Ride and I were talking about maybe getting back up there, maybe in the spring when it was a little bit warmer. Because the coffee was good, the baked goods were good, the atmosphere was fun, and the ride to get there was an absolute blast. So just the other day, I came across some terrible news on Facebook that the Bames Coffee Shop was closing. And it's really, really unfortunate because it's an awesome little place and the ride to get there is fantastic. So I started skimming through some of the comments, and of course, people that love the business are a bit upset because I guess there's a Dunkin' Donuts. I know it's called Dunkin', but I'm 40 years old. I grew up with Dunkin' Donuts in my mind. It's Dunkin' Donuts, not Dunkin'. Anyway, people are upset that people were going past Bames Coffee Shop to pick up coffee at Dunkin', you know, just so that they could save a buck on a cup of coffee or things like that. Now, I understand people getting a little upset about a business closing. I've had a number of local businesses close over the years that it was really sad to see go. But I can kind of sort of see it happening in this instance. You know, nothing against the business owners or anything. I think it's an awesome shop. But the retail space is massive. I mean, like if I had to guess, I would say the worship space, which is where the coffee shop is and where the lounge is probably 20 feet by 40 feet. And that's probably being a bit conservative. And then the little museum space is another, let's say 20 by 20. I mean, quick math, is that like 9,000 square feet of retail space that is being kept up by this little coffee shop? So the overhead on that place had to be monumental, not to mention the heating bill. I mean, imagine trying to heat an 8,000 square foot space with a vaulted 20 foot ceiling at the peak. I mean, it's the overhead had to be staggering at that place. But despite that, it was an awesome place, and I'm really, really sad to see it go. I guess I'm just going to have to try to find something else in the Shamokin area to visit the next time I hit up the Pennsylvania Tail of the Dragon, PA 125 and Goldmine Road. Because I'm definitely going to be taking that ride again. Now it's just what becomes the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? Like, what do we take that amazing route for? I don't know. I'm sad to hear that it's going, though. Really cool place. All right, we've reached the point of the podcast where I like to do some featured content. In this case, I don't want to showcase a particular video. I want to showcase a particular content creator. And that content creator is Road Reality. He's got a blog, roadreality.com, but the focal point is the Road Reality YouTube channel, which I enjoy quite a bit. If you're into, I want to say, like, if you're into motorcycles, it's a great channel to watch, but it's such a broad mix of stuff. It is truly a motorcycle mixed bag at Road Reality. So John rides an old Kawasaki. I don't remember what the year is. Early 80s, I believe. He's also got a newer Harley Bagger. So depending on his mood, you may see the Kawasaki, you may see the Harley. The topics are very, very broad. You know, he may just be rambling while he's riding down the road. He may pick a topic and kind of dive in on something serious. But some of the other things that he does that I find very, very interesting is he tries to educate people that are content creators, motovloggers like myself. So he showcases a lot of DaVinci Resolve tutorials. DaVinci Resolve is a software suite that I use to edit this podcast and all of my videos on YouTube. And he does a really good job of teaching people how to do certain things. I mean, DaVinci Resolve, there's a free portion of software and there's a paid license. I use the free software and it does more than I would ever use it for. It's truly impressive what this piece of software can do. And parts of it are really intimidating. And it's cool to be able to pull up John's videos, Road Reality, and start looking through some of them and seeing that pieces of the software aren't as intimidating as they seem. And he's just a cool guy, laid back, fun. He's also into Lego, which is kind of weird, but hey, whatever floats your boat. But great channel. You should definitely check him out. I do not think you will be disappointed. So in the last segment of the podcast, I want to talk a little bit about a recent ride that went on. As I said, weather's getting colder, days are getting shorter. The opportunity to ride are coming few and far between anymore. And man, there are days or weeks where it's like almost impossible to get out and take a ride. So this past Saturday, I got a surprise free afternoon. My wife was scheduled to work a butt ton of days back to back because of the holiday schedule and all that. And just out of the blue, she was able to take a Saturday off, you know, hang out with the kids after Thanksgiving. And I thought it was a great opportunity to hop on the bike and go for a ride. So we planned our day around that. And I got some work done in the morning, hopped on the bike by about 10 o'clock. I want to say it was probably about 40 degrees at that point. It was chilly, but it was warm enough that I didn't feel like I had to bundle up under multiple layers just to be comfortable going down the road. So just a tangent here. So I guess it was about a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago. It was in the low to mid 30s, and I had like 2 hours free. And I was going to go out for a ride. So I got all geared up. I knew it was going to be cold. I put on my ballistic nylon pants. I put the thermal liner in the pants. I had a base layer on up top. I put the liner in my coat, put my coat on. I'm struggling to get all this stuff zipped up. I'm feeling completely compressed. I got this a fleece balaclava around my neck. My helmet on. I'm like totally compact. And where I was going, I thought, oh, you know, it'd be fun to take the Ninja 400. So I have the Ninja warming up outside. I get all my stuff on. I hop on the bike. And I don't even make it out of my driveway. I get to the end of the driveway, and I'm, like, struggling to move on this thing. I end up turning around, bringing the Ninja back, putting it back in the shed, getting the MT-09 out because it's bigger and more roomy. And I went out for an hour and a half on the MT-09. It was loads of fun. But yeah, it's getting to the point where you really got to bundle up to stay warm. And now it's like affecting my motorcycle choices. I can't take the little Ninja because, well, I just feel like I've got too many layers on to be comfortable. I've got too many layers on to feel like I can maneuver the bike freely. The MT-09, again, is bigger, so it's a bit easier to ride. So anyway, to get back to what I was talking about, and quite frankly, I don't even remember what I was talking about. Just going on too many tangents, I suppose. So Saturday, I had some free time. I decided I was going to take the MT-09. I had, you know, I wasn't overly bundled up, but I did take my thermal liner and some extra warm stuff in a backpack in case I needed it. And I set off. Before I left, I was going through the usual analysis paralysis situation where I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. Because this is a struggle that I seem to go through every single ride where I want to ride somewhere with a purpose, but I don't necessarily know where I want to go. And then there are places that I want to go, but I want to enjoy them with friends. I don't necessarily want to go by myself. And, you know, I was kind of bouncing around with a couple ideas. And finally, I decided that I was going to take a ride out to Hamburg. In Hamburg there's this massive place called Cabela's. They were purchased by Bass Pro Shop. There are Cabela's in other states, but I don't think any of them are nearly as big as the one we have in Hamburg. I mean, it's a massive store. There's taxidermy everywhere. And the whole Hamburg area, that section of town, is all of the architecture mimics the Cabela's. Like, it's all the same design style, I guess because Cabela's is just so damn big that the municipality or the township wants everything to look similar and look neat. So anyway, right across the parking lot from Cabela's is this place called Cigars International. It's basically a superstore for cigars. It's a massive place that kind of matches Cabela's. Not nearly as big as Cabela's, but again, looks kind of the same sort of visual appeal. And I haven't been there in a number of years. I believe this is like the third CI location. There's the original store in downtown Bethlehem that I've only ever been to once, and it's surprisingly small. There's the superstore in or outside of Easton, which is like an old barn that's been repurposed. Big place, but there's not much in the way of seating. And then there's the new place that they opened up a few years ago in Hamburg, which has a bar inside, pool tables. I mean, like, it's a big place. And there's like this mezzanine seating. There's like, they've got a deck that surrounds that wraps the building. I believe they have an amphitheater in the back. They do all sorts of stuff there. I mean, I believe they set up midget wrestling at one point in time. They have local bands come out somewhat frequently. it's a pretty happening place, and it's kind of counterintuitive to the type of place that I enjoy hanging out in. I don't like being around all those people, but it's been quite a while since I've been out there. So I thought, you know, I'll hop on the bike, I'll take a ride out to Cigars International, and just kind of poke around, see what they have, maybe pick up a couple of cigars, and then head home. So I used Calimoto to route to create a map, a route out there. It took me a little over an hour, hour and 20 minutes or so, taking all twisty back roads, which was loads of fun. A variety of roads I've never been on before. Some roads I had been on but totally forgot about. And it was just a really nice ride out there. The weather cooperated and the roads were great. I was surprised to find out that I was not the only motorcycle in the parking lot, despite it being a little chilly. There was three Harleys parked out front. Looked like there was a local motorcycle club there. Some guys were wandering around shopping. And I just kind of made my way through the store. I did record a bunch of video on the way out there. And by the time I got there, I just had no motivation to film anything inside the store. So I'm probably going to scrap all of that video footage. There's kind of no point in publishing a video of me riding to Cigars International and then it ending when I pull into the parking lot. So it was a nice ride and I enjoyed myself, picked up a couple of cigars while I was there. And then on my way home, I decided that I wanted to drag out the trip a little bit. So instead of going direct home, I wound up using the GPS or Calimoto to get me, I'd say, a third of the way home before I finally turned it off. And then I started veering various directions to hit up a couple of roadside attractions that were kind of on the way home. I stopped at the literal fork in the road in Centerport, which is it's on roadsideamerica.com. If you've never seen that website before, it has a state-by-state listing, so you can click on Pennsylvania. You can look in your area, and it'll tell you all the weird little roadside attractions you can visit. The literal fork in the road is one of them. It's not something that I would go out of my way to see. It's like a literal, like a metal fork that's like 12 feet tall, just like stuck in the road. I guess it was an advertisement for a business that's no longer there. But it's on the Roadside Attractions website. I thought it'd be pretty cool. Or Roadside America website. So I was driving right past it anyway. So I stopped, took a couple of pictures, got back in the bike, rode some more. I stopped off at this random church that looked kind of cool. And I thought it'd be cool to get a picture of my bike with this big like church in the background. From there, on my way home, I decided to swing past the Redding Pagoda, which I've been to dozens of times. It was mobbed. It was super packed. Lots of cars there. Lots of people out taking pictures of the pagoda, selfies with the pagoda in the background. People were taking turns parking their cars or their Rikers like underneath the Redding Pagoda sign and getting pictures of with the pagoda in the background. I wasn't about to do that. Basically, I just went through, pulled off at one of the overlooks on Skyline Drive, took a picture of my bike and the city of Redding in the background, hopped on the bike again and split. From there, I stopped off at the Grismer's Mill Covered Bridge to see if there were any additional Motovlogger stickers on the sign out there. There was. Motomengi. Looks like Motomengi's sticker is now on the back of the sign. I was looking for a fancy way of saying it's on the back of the sign, but nothing came to me. So Motomengi's sticker's there, which is really cool to see. Took a couple of pictures, then hit up a couple of more back roads on the way home. By the time I got back home, it was like 140 miles. And I misjudged the time for some reason. I was thinking that I was going to get back just as it was starting to get dark. But for whatever reason, I wound up getting home about an hour before dark. Had I realized that before I pulled into the shed, I probably would have ridden around for another hour and really maximized my time. With the days getting short, it just seemed like a no-brainer to stay out an extra 45 minutes to an hour. But It was a really nice ride. I'm not sure how many more I'm going to be able to get in between now and, well, the next riding season, just because, again, cold, dark, it's been really wet. I mean, the other day I went out and I was walking out here to the shed to do something, and there was sleet bouncing off the ground, you know, half frozen rain, you know, bouncing around, and that was pretty disappointing to see. In fact, when I got on the bike and bundled up and had to swap out for the MT-09, I went through Boyertown and there was a section that had a bunch of snow like in the grass and on the trees and stuff. So winter is right around the corner. I'm trying to enjoy every little bit of riding that I can before the cold really sets in. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed the video or the audio feed, and you are eager to join me again in 2 weeks. You know, coming up in the winter, I was thinking about, should probably back up here a little bit. Usually, as the riding season comes to a close, a lot of the YouTube channels that I watch begin to taper off their content so they can coast through the winter. Basically, they'll record a surplus of content during the spring and the summer, and then they'll sort of slowly release that content over the winter when no one is riding. I've been doing the opposite for the last couple of years, and I use the winter as an opportunity to just buckshot all of my stuff and just get it out in hopes that like people are amped up and ready to be riding again and like on the lookout for motorcycle content. That hasn't been, has not worked out that way, but that's kind of the way that things have been going the last 2 years. This year though, between being down for a couple of weeks when I hurt my back, the MT-09 being down for a couple of weeks for repairs, there haven't been a lot of opportunities to get out and record various things. And my vision for my YouTube channel has sort of shifted a little bit, and I'm not recording the same types of content that I used to record, and I'm trying to take the channel in a slightly different direction with less motovlogging, more like purpose-driven content, destination rides, seeing things, visiting historical sites, rather than just getting out and talking on the motorcycle. So because I haven't been recording a lot of that sort of content, I don't have a big surplus of stuff to push out over the winter. What I have been considering is, instead of dropping off and only posting a video every 2 weeks when I do the podcast, is possibly switching over to a weekly podcast over the winter, and then maybe seeing if I can keep the momentum going in the spring, and then sort of release different videos kind of in between podcast episodes or around podcast episodes. Haven't really made that decision just yet. I need to get into the winter a little bit and see just how difficult it's going to be to record in a space that is not insulated and not heated. Unfortunately, there's no real, I'm telling you about an update and I don't have like anything finalized. So my apologies for that. Just keep an eye out on the podcast and we'll see what happens during the winter. Either it's going to stay a bi-weekly podcast or we're going to switch over to a weekly format. That decision hasn't been made yet. Either way, please consider subscribing to the Walt NPA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can also subscribe to the Motorcycle Adjacent podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Anchor. Lots of places where you can consume content. Lots and lots of places. Again, thank you very much for sticking around to the very end of this episode. As always, ride safe, and I will catch you in the next one.